Everybody, we are back with you once more, fresh from 300 missions in VR, running the training sim on how to podcast good mode. Unfortunately, we failed every single one of them, so here we are, ready to slip on bird shit and deliver you a plate full of mediocrity straight up your nano machines. For newbies, think of us as the Otacon to your snake, or even the rose to your Raiden slash Jack. This week, guiding you through the steel corridors of Metal Gear Solid 2. My name is David, his name is Alex, and we are Winner and Shoe. How are you today, Alex?
Delighted by that intro. That was excellent writing. You're somewhat of an auteur of the podcasting world, I'm sure.
One day they will see me for what I am.
Exactly, and then your name will be removed from all of the podcasts.
Some might say I'm a man that lifts other ideas wholesale and puts them in my own thing to claim as my own.
Oh my god! I was just having a quick glance over the Wikipedia for the game we are discussing today, and it is like buzzword bingo, isn't it? Fucking hell, man! They love a bit of just theory.
We were speaking earlier on about playing Metal Gear Solid 3 later in the year, and I was listening to that Backpage podcast on your recommendation before we started recording. And they were talking about that Metal Gear Solid 3 came up, and they were talking about how it's a much simpler game.
Yeah.
So have you played 3?
No.
You haven't? Okay, so I'm wondering how simple it gets. Is this simple as in, like, simple for everyone, or is this, like, Metal Gear Solid simple as in it's still...
I'd quite like Metal Gear Solid simple to be the answer there.
Yeah.
I think too simple is, you know...
It's not what this is, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's not what we're here for. I have tried to play 3 on two separate occasions, I believe. I used to own it on the PS2, and I think the first time I ever played it, I walked the wrong direction and fell off a cliff and died within like 10 seconds. And then...
much like your Vamp experience when you were fighting Vamp in the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then I think I must have played like 5 or 10 minutes and just gave up and then... sold it because it was worth something, but and I think I don't know if I had it, but I'm pretty sure I at least borrowed the 3DS version, but it controls were horrific, so never really gave that a shot either. So I am excited to play that, and that is what a lot of people seem to think is like the best one.
Seems to be. However, I don't know. I think I have not played it. I think I was saying this to you and KDB last time we did a podcast. My sort of experience of the Metal Gear franchise is 1 and 2 now, and 5. And I've got like maybe 2/3 of the way through 5. I haven't completed it.
I couldn't get on with it.
Well, see, I was about to say, I think probably 5 is going to be my favourite of the lot.
I'd be willing to give it another shot.
There's some interesting parallels. I think Ground Zeroes is a bit like the tanker mission in this.
I agree. Yeah. We also set in on Kojima. We have seen Kojima in the flesh in our lives.
Have we?
That must have been Eurogamer.
Oh,
I think.
Was he there? Was he on the stage?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
He talked about the... Yeah, he just showed the beginning of the demo for Ground Zeroes, and we were there sort of watching him talk with an interpreter, and we were quite near the back, and we were probably quite distracted by wanting to get loads of Street Pass data on our 3DSs. But we were there, goddammit. We've shared a room with Hideo Kojima.
I do now remember standing in a queue. It must have been waiting to get into that, and there being a lot of Metal Gear Solid cosplay going on.
Yes. I wonder, someone must have done a Raiden cosplay.
I'll have to. I remember there being a snake, and I remember there being a girl. But what she was dressed as, I'm not, maybe a Meryl, maybe.
thankfully, Quiet didn't exist at that point.
Thank God. Although
I don't want to go to a games convention and see someone dressed as Quiet.
Although there's
unless they've been hired by someone.
What's the character in Metal Gear Solid 2 that basically wears a mankini the whole time?
Oh, Fortune.
Yeah. So I don't know. They've always had to get the skin out.
That is true. Oh yeah, there's so much stuff I want to talk about. We need to logically try and plot it out. Not that Metal Gear does that.
Yeah, it's tempting to just dive in, but yeah, we need to follow this in some sort of. We need to try and be more coherent. So otherwise, this will be a very confusing podcast.
I've gone for my alcoholic beverage for this podcast. I have gone suitably batshit in relation to Metal Gear by having a banana beer. Mongozo.
Oh, nice.
It is really nice.
Banana beers, yeah. I was watching something and they were talking about different types of. Oh, no, it wasn't banana beer. It was banana wine. Because of global warming, a lot of places, unlike Scotland, like get to be really hot or too hot and wet. So apparently in Africa, the banana harvest is not going well and it's all going out of date. So they're having to use lots of bananas quickly. So there's like a pop-up industry of banana wine.
Is that bananas that haven't been used quickly enough? Is that for like surplus rotting banana?
Surplus banana. And it's like rather than letting them rot, they're like, well, what can we do with them? Well, let's ferment them and get ourselves drugged out of our eyeballs. So
wow,
that's what humans
that'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife makes a cracking banana bread cake, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, really.
Yeah, I do like a banana bread. Big fan of that. Mm-hmm. Do you think Kojima likes a banana bread? Because he did go through a period of. Just basically using his Twitter account as a menu for what's Kojima eating today.
He did, didn't he? Yeah. An odd fellow. It's funny, actually, thinking about like how he basically seemingly was held, not quite held hostage by Konami, but he had golden handcuffs on him in terms of this series.
Everything
after this game we're going to talk about today, because this is supposed to be his last Metal Gear, then 3, then 4, then 5, actually was, because, you know, he gone, buddy.
He's ran off to go make other games that are equally as strange.
Yeah, but it's funny because I guess maybe it was presented to him as like, you know, you can have a couple of million to make a Silent Hill game or whatever, or you can have hundreds of millions to make Metal Gear. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting that like his latter day period at Konami was so fraught and appeared to be him trying to escape from the franchise, because I don't think it's unusual that maybe he just wants to do something different, and fair enough, you can't really blame him for that. There's lots of people across all media, whether that's film, books particularly, I mean, Terry Pratchett's a great example, like fashion entire careers out of living in one world and sort of padding that out and creating it. J.R.R. Tolkien will forever be famous for many, many books he wrote within the Lord of the Rings universe. So I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with someone who dedicates themselves to one thing for an entire career. But if you don't want to, then hey, who cares?
I guess part of it as well is just like Konami. He must have been, outside of the Pro Evo guys, must have been the only one making an actual video game at that company when he left.
Yeah, which is what a shame what has become of that company.
Yeah, evidenced quite effectively by the shitey remaster that you played for this.
Yeah.
He's doing, what's it called? OD? Is that his next game?
Well, I think he's maybe expanded into being a two-game studio, because they're obviously working on Death Stranding 2. And then there's the Xbox exclusive game that he's meant to be working on.
Yeah, OD or Overdose.
Is that the Xbox one, is it?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a PT-style game. But that's the one where you basically just saw people talking, like really, really good motion capture faces.
Yes, that's right.
That's in partnership with Xbox Game Studios, that one.
Was that the one that got like, what, like 20 minutes dedicated at the Game Awards to it, and people weren't even allowed to say thank you for 30 seconds on that show?
He will forever be a big deal, I guess. Unless he does something horrific.
And rightly so. The man is a legend within the industry. And for the most part, like I feel like I was like, right, I need to say this at the top because I don't want to be misconstrued. Like, I think both of us have got issues with the Metal Gear Solid franchise, and in particular Metal Gear Solid 2 that we're about to talk about, but I very much like this game. Like, it's an absolute belter. Like, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, if I was reviewing it, I think. Probably wouldn't get a 10, probably get a 9. It is an utterly fantastic game. I just wanted to get that out of the way before we start the inevitable criticisms and complaints that we have.
Yeah, yeah.
It's coming from a place of respect.
Well, exactly. And I guess it's just like you can look at it from the surface from a memory and sort of think like, oh, Metal Gear 2 is the one where he just fucking went absolutely mental with ridiculously long cutscenes, and then he put all this like postmodern existential, profound themes in the game. And to just think of the game as that, which I guess a lot of people, they add that to Raiden and decide that this is the worst game in the series. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you could suggest that he put so much effort into that, and you'd be just ignoring how much attention to detail and how much incredible game design has gone into the actual feeling of the game in your hands.
Yeah.
Very easy to forget that when it takes that feeling away every 5 minutes to then make you put the pad down for half an hour.
Yes.
But the way this plays as a stealth game, we haven't played the rest of them in the series. I didn't get on with Metal Gear 5, but I understand that is very well thought of as a stealth experience. Mm-hmm. But as somebody who's not massively into stealth games and has tried to play quite a lot of them, like, this is probably my favorite stealth experience in gaming.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not very good at Hitman. I've never really been into Splinter Cell. Willing to change those thoughts. But I love how much you can kind of mess around in this one without it necessarily requiring galaxy brain levels of creativity or having your handheld like Hitman decided it should probably start doing because people can't figure out all the really intricate ways to off somebody. But just like the holding up system, where you can stand behind a guy and just point your gun at them and he tells them to freeze, and you can shoot behind them to scare them. And sometimes they're like, oh, are you going to shoot me or what? And you can like shoot their hand that they've got raised, and they'll like have it hanging down by their side, and it'll be like shaking and jerking. You can shoot them in the dick with a tranquilizer to put them out. Like, you can really fuck with people in this. And there's, all the stuff in the environments you can muck about with, like the amount of effort that they put into for a PS2 game, the way you could shoot like frying pans and have them swing about and knock over ice buckets and shoot the individual ice cubes and, the watermelons and the glass bottles on the tanker missions and shooting bags of flour to then see infrared lasers. Like, I watched the making of DVD that comes with the second game on with the game on the PS2. And they focus quite a lot on talking about how they wanted to make everything fun and how they kept taking things out that weren't fun, which no one got the memo that watching a cutscene for half an hour was not necessarily fun.
Especially when it's not an actual cutscene. It's just little comms screen, and it's just two static faces staring at each other, talking back and forth.
Well, not static this time. It's they are kind of moving and bobbing around. I've seen a lot of, well, not a lot, but I was watching a couple of videos like G-Man Lives or whatever. I was just dealing with his upward inflections while watching it. Mm. And he was talking about how much better it was that they had the codec set up with the actual CGI. I really am a fan of the original codec style.
I'm also,
I don't know about you.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm also confused by the Metal Gear Solid 2 codec, because very often there's a cutscene happening in the game and they go, oh, let's take this to whatever they call it, their comms link.
They just point at their head. Don't worry.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that's like a security thing, because people can't hear them speaking. So there's some sort of internal monologue going. So what is the screen?
This is what's been bothering me. I'm glad you brought that up.
Is it, like, are they closing their eyes in imagining this, or I don't get like what that is, because presumably they're just standing next to each other like this in silence if you were to come across them in the wild.
But you're right, they are then animated on the screen.
Yeah,
because they make a point of as which we'll get more on later, but they make a point of the fact that it stimulates the small bones in your ear so that nobody can hear what's coming through your what's being said to you.
Yeah.
But at no point do they ever suggest that you cannot be heard responding back. And Raiden is doing this like the time when he's having a codec conversation with fucking Ames in the middle of that room full of hostages.
Yeah.
As David suggests, like, are they thinking, and then it comes through to each other's...
Because
how does a thought stimulate the bones of someone's ear? That's not... It has to be you talking.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of how does this work in Metal Gear Solid seems to boil down to nanomachines. Seems to be the answer to all of it, from what I've gathered.
Even worse than that, as an example, you know, you were talking earlier... What were you talking about earlier?
Was I moaning about
VAMP?
VAMP, because yeah, in the game at the end when Fortune dies, Ocelot goes, "Oh, there's no such thing as like special powers or something like that."
Yeah,
and then he shoots her, and I was just like, "Well, yeah. VAMP has been walking in water for like 10 hours. What?"
And he legged it up the side of that.
So he did,
like right up the side of one of the big shell pipes. He just fucking runs up it. But you're saying that in four,
must have made an appearance in four, and the reason he can do all those things is because of nanomachines.
And even worse than that, and even funnier than that, is, you know, it's widely regarded, I think, that Ocelot's arm being controlled by liquid fucking bollocks. That's just utter nonsense.
Yes.
Apparently in Metal Gear 4, they retconned that by saying that Ocelot was just pretending.
Amazing.
Everyone told Kojima that was the worst idea he's ever had. And he was like, "Nah, what you thought that was real? Nah, he was just doing a voice."
Yeah.
And had a weird arm.
Very good voice.
Yeah. Wow. Hello, brother. Yeah. Well, no, fair enough. Good actor. I love that, though. They're just like, "Nah, he was just pretending. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. It's fine." Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. I still don't really understand what Ocelot's motive was. Even now. Like, what was he doing?
Not sure.
He works for the Patriots,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was going to say, he seemed to know more than the others. He seemed to be the actual bad guy come the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah, he kind of takes the reins as like the series big bad, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Going forward, as far as I could tell, although technically going backward for the next one.
So the final boss, what's he called? Solidus Snake?
Yeah, the former president Solidus Snake that no one cottoned onto. Just looks a bit familiar, but don't worry about it.
Doc Ock. Is he...
Yes.
Is he who you play as in Metal Gear Solid 5?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Because Metal Gear Solid 5 is set in the 80s, isn't it? And I think you play as... Is Big Boss different? I think you play as Big Boss in Metal Gear Solid 5 before he turned bad.
So we have already prefaced this by telling the listeners that you've played what? 1, 2 and 5. And
one,
I've played
1,
2 and a bit of 5. So
Forgive
us, everybody, for not knowing any of the other fucking mental stuff that goes on in this franchise. Let's just see who you play as in 5. That's Big Boss as well. But he adopts the codename Venom Snake.
Who, Big Boss?
Yeah.
And is Big Boss like the original before? He's not a clone. Everyone's a clone of Big Boss. Is that right?
Yes. And you play as him, I believe, as well in 3, right?
Oh, do you? Okay.
Which was 1964.
A bit of the old Star Wars going on here then, where the ultimate bad guy is actually... I don't know, is he actually the good guy? I don't know.
It's funny that you mentioned Star Wars when this game features the boss Fat Man, who looks exactly like Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader when he takes his helmet off.
Yeah, he does.
That can't be an accident. Like, the fact that you've got Jack and Rose as the main characters of the game after a fucking big boat sinks. There's no, like, sometimes this genius auteur does not go for subtlety as his main
MO. He does not. So, listen
fucking
to that.
Skin as well.
I don't know where it's going to come up, but I may as well get out of here so I don't forget. Absolute mind blown at the theory that you are riding in the tanker, but in a VR mission.
Yes.
Absolute mind blown with that. That's fantastic.
It's brilliant. So I'm assuming from that you're already aware that you can skip the tanker sequence in the game. You get options at the main menu, don't you, where you can go shell or straight to shell. And if you go tanker first, then the colonel says something to you about, like, oh, you've already done infiltration in VR, so you know what you're doing. Whereas if you don't do the tanker mission, he then says, seeing as you've not done infiltration before, this is how blah 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 blah. And Raiden also talks about that mission to Snake later on when he's talking about the tanker mission. He says, I've done that in VR, and Snake says that he doubts it accurately simulates the events of that mission. So
yeah, he did say that.
Raiden is obviously, you can tell Raiden's like a massive Snake fanboy from the get-go. Yeah. But yeah, the fact that we are probably playing the beginning of this game as Raiden playing as Snake is just awesome. Really, really awesome. Well, I mean, the whole thing's a simulation anyway.
Yeah,
right?
So that was going to be my question. Is the whole thing a simulation or is it real? It seems to be unclear. Because I was actually tempted to come to the conclusion that, you know, like when you're, oh, what's the girl, Otacon's sister?
Emma.
When you go and get her and she's got this virus, I wondered if Solid Snake, this Plissken, is the sort of manifestation of the virus in the simulation, because they keep talking about how he's an unexpected, yes, he's an unexpected variable or something in the simulation. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when Snake's got the thing, he's like, oh, we didn't give you the real one, the real virus card, whatever, disc. And he's holding it and they never actually see what it was or who it was. And I wondered if he was the virus, because he helps you quite a lot in the game as well. Like, there's basically, if you can do that bit leading up to the vamp boss fight on the open water, when Emma's crossing the nets, he basically does that for you.
Yeah, I asked him to do it after a while.
Mm-hmm.
You can just after I failed the first time and possibly just kept missing something, I was just like, fuck it, call him.
Yeah.
But my reading of that is that Snake is real. So the simulation or the events of the game have been set up by the Patriots to do this like selective, whatever it is that they're trying to do. And Snake gets involved in it as a variable. So they do not expect Snake to get involved in this simulation that they're trying to put Raiden through, and Snake kind of ruins everything as a result.
To what end, I guess, is the thing. If it's a simulation, what does it matter? Just leave him.
Isn't the whole thing... part of the reasoning for the simulation is to set up that Raiden will end up killing Solidus.
Is that what they're doing? They're basically trying to find someone good enough to kill him.
Yeah, because he's the one trying to take down the Patriots by, well, interfering with everything that the Patriots are trying to do and stealing Metal Gear and all of that. He's the one who's trying to.
Yeah, okay, and I guess by the end, do away with them. Raiden's not keen to help.
I'll read the Wikipedia block because it's not actually that long, okay, which is crazy considering how long this is. But we don't need to talk about the tank a bit. We've already seen that. Already talked about that.
Which is a great section, by the way.
Fucking amazing. Like that's like the purest Metal Gear Solid experience for me. Like I love it.
And it's designed so well in that it, like you were saying before, like with the shooting, you get your cigarettes, you can shoot the flower bags, it does the sneezing thing when you've been out in the rain, like it does all these little bits.
Oh, the rain,
It forces you to engage with the first person shooting, sort of explains that without overtly doing it. It is a much better tutorial than the sort of tutorial you get after you've completed that section, which is, I assume that's deliberate, but yeah, I thought that was a really well done tutorial and like a little mini but not so mini sort of starter to the game. So such a good opening.
Obviously the simulation that we've been talking about a few minutes ago with, you know, that's been set up for Raiden, it's actually quite funny that I think I complained to you at the time of like, fucking it, why is the Colonel like giving me all this tutorial stuff and I've already played the game for 3 hours? Obviously there's, as we just pointed out, you could skip that, so maybe that's to, you know, initially to help a player who skipped the tanker. But also most of the dialogue that the Colonel says to you at the beginning of the Raiden section, including after, you know, having just seen Raiden go up a lift and take his diving mask off, the exact same as Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah.
Loads of the dialogue is exactly the same, word for word.
Yeah, it's meant to be like it's meant to be a bit like the sort of a recreation of the Shadow Moses incident,
yes,
isn't it? Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Hence the ninja, hence the torture scene. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where they've seeded in what's going on, like, really brilliantly at the beginning. Yeah. And also done this, like, you know, meta commentary on, oh, Metal Gear Solid fans just want the same thing again, but, you know, better looking or whatever. Well, here's the fucking exact same thing again, dickheads. But then when they're having to explain that to you for 45 minutes when you're not allowed to play at the end of the game.
Yeah.
That's not how you do it. No. But anyway.
Yeah. And the other thing I will say, sorry, before you read your thing, I like about that section is, you know, you're talking about, which makes more sense now, you were talking about them like trying to build Raiden up to be this guy that could take down Snake, is that, especially at the start of that game, and as the game progresses, Snake is literally always one step ahead of you. Like, he's just going up the lift when you arrive. He's like one bomb ahead of you when you check in, when you're defusing the bombs. He's just like this one little bit ahead of you every step of the way, which I quite like, because Raiden is such a comical, like, oh, I'm a great agent. I've done 300 VR missions. I'm so good. I'm so experienced. And then he, like,
it's indistinguishable from the real thing.
Yeah. And then he goes and slips some bird shit, which I'm just like, yes, there was no bird shit in the VR mission.
I guess we can talk about the as we're talking about the tanker, actually, you know, the absolute, like, highest kudos I could possibly give to Kojima and Konami for pulling the wool over everybody's eyes that you don't play a Snake for the whole game. I mean, obviously, you know, the son bitch isn't on the front of the box or the back of the box. Raiden is not anywhere near that. Like, they did this crazy cool demo of the tanker that everybody got to play for Zone of the Enders, except me when I bought it off of eBay because it didn't have that disc in it. It's the grossest secondhand game I've ever seen in my life.
God.
I then sent that back for a refund. I said I wanted to, like, return it, and they just gave me a refund. They don't even want it. They didn't even ask. No one even contacted me. It just said, your refund's been processed. It's like, has it? I guess I'll throw it in the bin then. I can't believe how they managed to do that. Like, you could never do that now. Just, that would never happen, that you could do that. I think it's amazing that they did that.
Remember when he tried to stealth announce Metal Gear Solid 5 with a guy with the bandages on his face? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he tried, yeah.
Everybody by that point was onto his shit. They knew what he was up to.
But yeah, just the fact that they did that, which, and I do like that. I like that they did that. I like being Raiden. Mm. I like that Snake is in there. I think I heard somebody somewhere describe it as, like, you're basically playing a Batman game where you're Robin being trained by Batman and who hangs out with you the whole time, which is a really good way of putting it. But back to what you were talking about with the bird shit, it's masterfully done how Kojima plays Raiden out as, like, a fucking Dilbert who just slips in bird shit and doesn't know what's going on and getting hassled by his absolute psycho girlfriend, who I guess is actually an AI, really. But he's just like a whining, moaning little bitch. They make him run around naked. And I hope you did as many of the flips as I did so you could try and maybe see his anus, but they didn't design an anus for Raiden, which, you know, there we go.
It's a real shame.
But
considering people think he's the anus of the series.
Yeah. I just think it's so interesting that they did that, but they know that you're gonna hate him, so they almost kind of encourage it by making him such a doofus. I was so surprised and, like, pleasantly surprised by the treatment of Raiden to almost, like, placate fans who are like, oh, fucking hell, man.
He did an old...
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he did the old young cop in RoboCop Rogue City that we just played. Because I started off, I just found Raiden to be an absolute pain in the asshole. He was just like...
Yeah.
He just thought he was great. He was, like you say, like a bit of a Dilbert. But by the end, I kind of get it and you get on board with it and you quite like him. And I think he's a great character. Yeah.
You've never played Rising Revengeance, have you?
I have not, no.
I'm a big fan of that game.
Watched a chunk of it getting played on Giant Bomb. That's how I know about the Make America Great Again line. But other than that, no.
I remember really liking that. I've clearly traded it in at some point, because I hope that I still had it.
And it's
on Steam. You can get it quite cheap on Steam, and it's got a 60 FPS boost.
We do have a series hole once we're finished with all the Resident Evil games, so maybe we'll get there.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So 2 years after their tanker, they had that. They built the environmental cleanup facility, Big Shell, to clear up the oil spill. Which and then there's a tour of President James Johnson is having this having a tour of it, but the Sons of Liberty raid the facility, take Johnson hostage, and threaten to destroy it. Foxhound's Rain is ordered by the colonel to rescue the hostages and disarm the terrorists. The surviving members of a responding Navy SEAL team, Iroquois Pliskin and Peter Stillman, help Raiden disable explosives planted by Fat Man. A timed bomb goes off, killing Stillman. Raiden kills Fat Man and encounters a mysterious cyborg ninja. Raiden and Pliskin arrange to transport hostages via helicopter, but are confronted by Dead Cell's leader, identifying as Solid Snake, flying a Harrier. Because of course he was. As another parallel to the first game, of course. Raiden shoots down the Harrier, but Solid Snake escapes with the stolen Metal Gear Ray. Pliskin reveals he is the real Solid Snake, and, along with Otacon, helps locate Johnson. Johnson reveals to Raiden that the United States democratic process is a sham staged by an organization called the Patriots, who secretly rule the country. Furthermore, the Big Shell is a facade to hide Arsenal gear. Arse being the very appropriate word for that, as you end up in its colon being shat out by it later on in the game. A submersible mobile fortress that houses an AI called GW. He explains the leader of Dead Cell is his predecessor, George Sears, a clone of Big Boss known as Solid as Snake, who plans to seize Arsenal and overthrow the Patriots. Ocelot then kills Johnson. Raiden rescues computer programmer Emma Emmerich, the stepsister of Otacon.
Thank God.
It plans to upload a virus into GW to disable Arsenal. Vamp stabs Emma before being shot by Raiden. Emma uploads the virus but dies from her injury as the virus is cut off prematurely. Otacon leaves to rescue the hostages while Raiden is captured by the ninja, revealed to be Olga when Snake seemingly betrays him. Big Shell collapses as Arsenal departs. Raiden awakens on Arsenal before Solidus, who reveals he had killed Raiden's parents and raised him as a child soldier during the Liberian Civil War. You may remember that they told him that he was part of, and I quote, the small boy unit, which I wouldn't even need to say that's aged terribly. That just should have never been called that. That's fucking insane. Solidus leaves and Olga frees Raiden, explaining she's a Patriot double agent forced to aid him in exchange for her child's safety. After the colonel begins acting erratically, Raiden discovers he is a construct of GW, damaged by the virus. Rose tells Raiden she had been ordered by the Patriots to become his lover and spy on him, and that she is pregnant with his child. Raiden finds Snake, who had helped Olga capture Raiden so they could gain entry to Arsenal. Fortune battles Snake while Raiden is forced into battle with AI-controlled Metal Gear Rays. The virus causes the Rays to malfunction and Olga sacrifices herself to save Raiden from Solidus. Snake and Raiden are captured and taken to the top of Arsenal by Solidus, Fortune and Ocelot. Ocelot reveals himself to be a Patriot agent and that the entire affair was orchestrated by the Patriots to artificially replicate a soldier, Raiden, on par with Solid Snake, titled the S3 Plan. Ocelot kills Fortune before being possessed by Liquid Snake, although he's only pretended. Liquid explains that Ocelot's severed right arm was replaced with his own and plans to hunt down the Patriots using his host's knowledge and the stolen Ray. Snake pursues Liquid as Arsenal loses control. Arsenal crashes into Manhattan. Raiden is contacted by an AI impersonating the Colonel and Rose. It states that GW was the only AI destroyed and that the S3 plan's real purpose is to control human thought to prevent society's regression into the digital era from trivial information drowning knowledge and truth. They order Raiden to eliminate Solidus. Refusal will result in the deaths of Olga's child and Rose. After Raiden defeats Solidus, Snake appears after tracking Liquid's Ray. Snake and Otacon plan to rescue Olga's child and locate the Patriots, whose details were hidden in the GW virus disk. Raiden is reunited with the real Rose. In the epilogue, having decoded the disk, Otacon and Snake find it contains data on all 12 members of the Patriots' highest council, the Wise Man's Committee. However, the members have allegedly been dead for 100 years.
Oh my god.
So there we go. So yes, I think the point of that was to confirm that Ocelot was indeed a Patriot agent. We might as well talk about the story, eh?
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, there's some other things about Raiden as well that I got from the making of. Apparently Kojima, now I don't know if this is I don't know if this was marketing. I was watching a lot of it and thinking, like, is this just like, you know, smiling face of the company marketing stuff? Or is this what you really wanted to do? Because it some of what he was saying didn't really seem to track with, you know, if you read stuff and there's loads of like essays and articles out there. So we're not going to go massive into the themes of this game because you can read smarter people than us to talk about it. He didn't really mention anything like that in the making of. So I don't know if he just didn't want to confuse people watching or he wanted to leave the messaging of the game ambiguous. Don't know. But he said that the main reason he wanted you to play as Raiden was to distance the player from Snake so that you can get like an objective view of Snake when you're not controlling him anymore, and that they wanted to make Snake seem even more impressive when you compare him to the character that you're playing as, which you touched on earlier that, you know, Snake is obviously doing all this badass shit.
And he's massively competent. Like, I almost text you at some point. Well, it was when you're doing the section near the end where you're sort of running through that gun room with Snake. Like,
yeah,
he's actually a useful companion. We've played a lot of games recently that have got companions, and some of them are no use.
Including this one with Emma.
Yeah. He is actually useful. He will take out lots and lots of people. Like, he does that whole vamp section for you up till vamp appears, obviously. And then when you're running through with your sword, like, he does most of that, or he did most of that for me.
Yeah,
anyway.
He kind of ruined the fun of the sword.
Yeah.
Stop shooting him, you prick.
Very, very good. And very, it is effective in that regard, and you see in that he is like a proper badass.
They actually describe him or them as King Kong and Godzilla. So Kojima said that Snake is Godzilla because he was created by man, like Godzilla was, because he's a clone of Big Boss, and Raiden's King Kong because he was captured by Solidus, as we just said, and brought to the United States and then attracted by a woman in Rose.
For God's sakes.
Again, you know, that's possibly a little bit more subtle, but still, it's quite on the nose. When he explains it like that, it's a bit on the nose, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, as we were talking about Rose and how much we hate Rose, because she is a fucking psycho, is she an AI the whole time? Because when I just read that plot out just then, it suggested that she's only an AI in the final boss fight when it started to get done by the virus.
I mean, she's certainly an AI there. I wasn't sure because, I mean, I think I said this to you when we were speaking about this game briefly. I was a little bit confused about whether Raiden could remember he was a child soldier or not. Because
it doesn't seem like he can.
Well,
oh, no,
it seems like he sort of forces it away. Yeah, so when it sort of gets revealed and it's like, oh, you used to do this, remember me, when it realized that he knew Solidus Snake. Mm. And he was like, no, I don't know who you are. And then he's like, oh yeah, you were a child soldier. And he was like, no, I wasn't. And he was like, yeah, you were. And then Raiden was like, oh yeah, I was. And then, but then after that, he has a conversation with Rose and he's like, this is why I can't get close to you because I didn't want you to know who I really was. And it's like, well, so did you know or not? Because it just wasn't clear. Mm. And I just couldn't figure that out. I just sort of passed it off as a bit of a plot hole, but it was not clear whether he knew or not.
No, I don't know if it's supposed to be. It does feel like a plot hole. I don't know if it's supposed to be playing more into this thing that they talk about later on with the digital age and how everybody kind of like that. They actually even mentioned basically things like echo chambers and safe spaces, don't they? Without explicitly saying that you block everything out and you stay in a place that you feel comfortable where, you know, you're never wrong or whatever it is. So
yeah,
I guess they allude
Twitter,
to the fact that he's incredibly good at blocking off everything from his past. Cause he does say something like that, doesn't he? Like, I don't want to bring it up because I never think about it and it's just completely erased in my brain.
Then they also talk about how, like, because of the internet, we're recording absolutely everything, whether it's useful or not. And there's just this mass of information that is completely unwieldy and completely unabsorbable, which feels like a bit of a commentary in the game, to be in a lot of ways, to be honest.
It's, well, yeah, whether they meant that or not, it really, really is. Uh-huh. There's obviously the big, like, the key comment and the key part of the dialogue that they throw at you in a massive, you know, just splooge of exposition at the end of the game, it's even on the Wikipedia page, like actually in like a little box next to the themes and analysis thing. I guess the most like prescient part of it is where she says, Colonel and Rose both say, in the current digitized world, trivial information is accumulating every second, preserved in all its triteness, never fading, always accessible. Rumors about petty issues, misinterpretations, slander, all this junk data preserved in an unfiltered state growing at an alarming rate. It will only slow down social progress, reduce the rate of evolution. The digital society furthers human flaws and selectively rewards development of convenient half-truths. Everyone withdraws into their own small gated community, afraid of a larger forum. They stay inside their little ponds, leaking whatever truth suits them into the growing cesspool of society at large. The different cardinal truths neither clash nor mesh. No one is invalidated, but nobody is right. Not even natural selection can take place here. The world is being engulfed in truth, and this is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Which is incredibly profound.
Which is a line from a poem by T.S. Eliot.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
It is profound.
I mean, that's actually incredible to have been written in 2001, when this game started development in 1998, mm-hmm. lest we forget as well.
Yeah, it's interesting that you sort of people saw this coming. I did look up this while you were saying that, because I think like it doesn't contradict itself, but it sort of, I'll read this and I'll tell you. So I've Googled what we were speaking about yesterday, and I've Googled the meaning of postmodernism. So postmodernism, the definition, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says postmodernism in Western philosophy is a late 20th century movement characterized by a broad skepticism, subjectivism, or relativism, a general suspicion of reason and an acute sensitivity to the role of ideology, which patriots are an ideology, in asserting and maintaining political and economic power. To me, that this is, if you take that's what the patriots are saying. The idea that in the Metal Gear Solid franchises is basically a commentary on postmodernism. I think he's also encouraging you to be suspicious of the people that say these things as well. So there might be an element of truth to that, but who is to say, and he's saying that we as a like sort of general population should be suspicious of the patriots or whatever organization, whether it's a government, whether it's a private business, talking about this. What? How do they describe information? What you said it there, basically trivial, how it's all trivial.
Triteness,
that's it. Like, who are they to decide what's trite and what's not, I guess?
Well, as you said, this is a corrupted AI that's been infected with a virus that's saying this. Like, the most profound statement the whole game makes is said by the evil antagonists in a fucked up form where they're turning into like skeleton ghosts on a Kodak.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So to me, that is... It's simultaneously interesting because it hits close to home and is as relevant today, probably more so than it was.
Yeah, definitely.
This predates 9/11 as well, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which is, again, like an interesting development that's happened throughout our history. But at the same time, I don't know, to me it suggests a wariness to these things, but also an equitable wariness should be applied to the people that are deeming what information is trite and what we should and should not keep. Because again, that's essentially the book burning in Nazi Germany, isn't it?
It's 1984, right?
Yeah.
It's the Ministry of Truth and that's whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is something that on the surface that like you were saying, there's something on the surface that seems extremely cutting and apt. But the more you dig into it, the more cutting and more apt it actually becomes, what you said. And it works on multiple layers in a way that I didn't quite appreciate until maybe the last 5 minutes of us discussing this. It really is quite profound, I think, that section.
We were talking about this yesterday, and we read that great article that was, I believe, originally on Gamasutra. I never knew how to say that. Mm-hmm. It's on a different website now. It was written about like how it wasn't quite debunking the like how prophetic this was, but it was sort of saying that Japan in the 80s had a real issue with like there's a real movement of postmodernism in Japan that Kojima would obviously have been growing up amongst, and that potentially he was more actually writing about the more recent past and current, you know, present than he was being a prophetic future predictor. But you said that you read quite a bit about that lost generation, or what did you say it was called?
The lost decade. Essentially like a decade in Japan where I think largely through the housing market and their equivalent of like the NASDAQ and the FTSE 100, their whatever that's called, I'm forgetting. But essentially that took a dive, and it took a decade to recover. And essentially what that meant was that the youth of that era, i.e. I think Kojima came in just before it happened, and then I wrote an article for Sega Force in which they were talking about Smilebit, who made Jet Set Radio. And it was the youngest development team that Sega had, and it was a team that had essentially grown up during this lost decade. And because the economy was struggling so much, the essentially kids coming out of education, university, were unable to get jobs, and they spent a decade unable to get experience. And because people that would normally enter the workplace, get a job out of uni, and then climb the career ladder, which then makes space for the other people coming out of uni to then get on the career ladder and climb up, they weren't climbing the career ladder because they were either losing their jobs, or the people with experience weren't getting promoted because the jobs weren't there for them to move into because the economy was struggling so much. So essentially, that whole generation was a bit lost. They're known as the lost generation. And that was a period that coincided, understandably so, because people weren't getting jobs, where crime and the people like the Yakuza were able to really take advantage of that decade. And crime, especially amongst young people, went skyrocketing. We spoke about it before, but there was like a biker gang that was predominantly made up of young people. The reason that they came up in the article is because they would run about in boiler suits, which is how one of the characters in Jet Set Radio is dressed. And the insinuation is that's a nod to that sort of counterculture that rose up. And that's why Japan's young people fell in love with like gangster rap, graffiti became a big thing, punks came back. And I actually thought that was a serendipitous thing, because when you look at the 70s and the 60s, which was another tough time in the UK for people, that was when punk and counterculture sort of sprouted up. And, that's essentially what that was. And I've forgotten why you asked about that. Sorry, I went on a bit of a...
In relation to like... Kojima was more writing about the present in Japan than he was.
Yeah, and I think that says a bigger thing about Japan as a culture, because they went through a boom after World War II, and I think everything
an incredible boom.
Yeah, I think everything, much like, again, to like sort of take it back to the UK, and regardless of what your political opinions are, I'm not here to judge, but a lot of people would make a social commentary on the reason that people voted for Brexit is because of there's like a British exceptionalism issue, as in because we won World War II and we've never sort of been occupied like the French have, we've never had to sort of be humbled like the Germans have. We live in this little island that makes us a little bit separated. We were once a global power because of our empire. There is a bit of an attitude amongst sort of middle Britain that we are better than, we're big tough guys that we're actually not, and that that is why we voted for Brexit, because we look around and think, oh, we don't need these people, we can do it on our own. And I think the same, but I think when it comes to like Japan and things like that, obviously they were bombed by a nuke. I think when you look at like their culture that comes up around that, and their suspicion after their emperor took them into World War II, and then the way they were treated by the Allies in World War II, to have a suspicion of authority, I think is quite a natural thing. And to me, this whole Metal Gear Solid 2 game is actually quite an appropriate commentary and sort of nod towards how, I mean, it mentions the Cold War and stuff, which is another direct sort of failing or sort of product of World War II, just how much our culture has been sort of shaken to the core by this event that happened 100 years ago. And I think it's unsurprising that Japan, even to this day, is still very suspicious of that sort of things. And why I think a lot of the story revolves around nuclear power, because I think I said this to you yesterday, the ultimate sort of byproduct of postmodernism in Japan, it clearly has to be nuclear war because that's their experience of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I just think it's really well done.
Did that lost decade generation, did that give rise to a lot of the like sort of obsessive fanaticism and otaku culture that potentially Kojima was not necessarily rallying against, but taking pot shots at with some of the ways that he baited and switched with the way that this game is written?
It may have done. Otaku culture is a sort of byproduct of consumerism and capitalism, isn't it? So
I suppose that is, yeah, it does sort of manifest itself in that way. I know that there's like, I'm thinking more of like a sort of the way that young men in that country retreated to become, you know, those who couldn't get into the workplace mm-hmm. and rise up the ladder or whatever were basically shunned by society. And, you know, that is such a key part of being a Japanese man and, you know, being a providing salary man for your family and being in the office all the time, that when these younger people couldn't get into that and there just was nothing opening up for them and it was all drying up, that they ended up being a very like insular culture who just all kind of sat at home, didn't get married, didn't have kids. You know, it's why Japan's got quite an issue with its aging population mm-hmm. as well, right? Because these people mm-hmm. never got successful and never went and had families because they were too busy sitting at home watching anime. And
I think you're spot on. And I think that's also why there's like the, I used to watch YouTube channels where it was like looking at mini homes in Japan and things like that. And like just these micro existences. I think you're right. Because
I've been in one.
Fantastic.
He basically had you walked into his house, to his room effectively. And on the right hand side was, along the wall of the right hand side was his kitchen. So he had a sink and like a little hob. Mm-hmm. On the left was a little toilet. And then the one room that he had, just had a futon in it. And he didn't have a TV, didn't have anything, didn't have a bed, just had a floor and a futon and a Nintendo Switch or something. I can't remember what he had now.
Yeah. I think you've struck on something there. It's probably quite accurate. Yeah. I think that's a good point you've made.
The plot is a bit overwrought with swerves and confusion, and it is bogged down by an overabundance of existential themes that don't necessarily hit with everybody playing it, because some of it is steeped in Japanese culture or the sort of state of the nation at the time. You know, looking back on it now, as we've just said, you know, a lot of it is incredibly profound. But I think for the majority of the game, like I really do enjoy the characters and the way that the plot goes. Mm-hmm. I don't like the setup of Dead Cell as much as I do
Foxhound.
Yeah, so I prefer Foxhound to Dead Cell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Nice little nod, of course, to Vulcan Raven at right at the beginning in the tank of this game,
where it's just nod.
And I also forgot to say earlier when you were saying about how Snake's always ahead of Raiden, I loved that bit where you're trying to follow Snake around the big shell, and there's a moment where you go outside and there's just like a guard kind of in the doorway knocked out, and as you go around the corner you can see a box just creeping across the floor. Did you catch that?
No, I missed that entirely.
Oh yeah, you must have missed that. It's when Snake says he's going to head off in front of you. Yeah, you just see a knocked out guard and a little box crawling over in front of you. It's really, really good.
There was a bit where you're listening to a radio conversation and the guy's like, there's someone hiding in a box.
I don't think I've ever, apart from the when you get pissed on by the wolves in Metal Gear Solid, mm-hmm. the two games that we've played now for this podcast, and probably historically as well, I don't think I've ever successfully managed to use the box ever.
I tried it with Raiden. There's a bit at the start where the first box you find in like a food pantry, and then a guard comes in. I hid in the box, and then the guard just came in and stood and then fell asleep. And I was like, why am I in this box? So I just got out and panned the guy's head in.
Because I got done by which I touched on earlier about, you know, how like how much I love this as a stealth experience. And Yeah, they got in a military consultant for this who like showed all the like the mocap artists how to properly like sort of clear a room and stuff. So there's stuff where they're like, you're seeing these guys in the motion capture suits standing on top of a set of stairs, and he told one of them like, if you're the last one to go past the guy who's keeping lookout, tap him on the shoulder so he knows that no one's behind him anymore. The clearing, did you ever get them when the guards did a clearing of the room for you?
Yeah, really good.
I was in a box at that point. I think it was pantry. So I'd obviously annoyed them all, ran into a pantry and thought, this is a perfect place for me to hide in a box. And then it brings up that little picture in picture box in the top left hand corner of like a view of all the guys coming in to clear the room. And they just shot the shit out of the
room. Did you use the right box?
They just hammered it with, oh, maybe not.
Because there's a different, because you don't want to be in the food box in the parcel room, for example.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't realize that I had to be in specific boxes, but I don't think they actually saw me in the box. They were just spraying and praying into the room. They just stood at the door and just shot the shit out of the room, and I kept getting hit by bullets, and it was like chewing up watermelons and bottles everywhere, and I was just getting wrecked.
I was thinking
great AI there.
I bet you, and I wish I'd done it now because I just thought of it there. I bet you in the parcel room where you get a box, and I bet you could jump in the conveyor belts and zoom around in a box in the conveyor belts.
Oh, yeah. I kept trying to get on the conveyor belts, but that room just seemed to respawn the enemies so often. I got fed up of it.
I was just doing flips and crawling around.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry, the story and the bosses. Let's talk about that, actually. I don't like Fortune. I think she's shit.
You just hide in the corner.
Oh, yeah. I want to die, but I can't.
Yeah. When she just, where was the thing that was keeping her alive? Was it on her gun?
Because Ocelot seemed to suggest Ocelot it was on his belt, but that was Ocelot, obvious.
Yeah, like, I thought Ocelot had nicked it. Her one.
Oh, maybe he did nick it. Yeah, I thought he just had, like, his thing was, like, interfering with hers.
Yeah, maybe.
Because you could, no, but you're right, he probably did nick it because they couldn't shoot him later, could they?
No.
But yeah, why didn't she notice that? And also, if that, like, why can't you just, you can't be shot at, right? But you can drown yourself. What's going to stop you from drowning? Can you not have a shower? If you have a shower, does all the water just fucking avoid you and go woof around the outside? Does Vamp consistently get wet if he stands near you this time rather than a bullet to the head?
I assume he could have drank her blood as well, which he likes to do.
Why couldn't Snake just go kick her in the cunt or something? Like, yeah, why can't you just go up and batter her in the face?
Yeah. Surely a bullet punch her.
Can nobody even touch her? If you go to touch her, does your hand just fly away?
Yeah, you slip away.
Yeah, I just, it's another plot hole, I guess, but I don't mind that gimmick of like, oh, no bullet can hit her. That's fucking crazy. But just the fact that she's just then like, I want to die because my dad died for the whole game.
Yeah, there
was no other personality to her other than that.
Like, massive sympathy, obviously, your dad died, but everybody's dad dies. So... Yeah. We don't all go full mental like she went.
Yeah. Because her dad's the one that was on the tank of the guy doing the talk to all the soldiers.
Ah, of course. Yes.
Which is one of the best parts of that game.
The lalu lile lo.
Well, yeah, that I don't understand. Because that's kind of like the Japanese alphabet style of, you know, like ai, u, e, o. But they don't have L in their language, so... Would they say Rari Rurero? I don't know. I don't understand what that is. I don't think at any point I figured out what the Lali Lule Lo was. I don't think they tell you. But I love that bit where he's doing that speech because you got played by Kojima at that point.
Oh, yeah, I did.
When the guy taking the speech does, because he does quite a few things, doesn't he? He says like, oh, let's have a stretch and just sort of relax and be at ease. And then they all just kind of like look around randomly. For the people who don't know exactly the bit we're talking about, it's where you're supposed to be taking pictures of a Metal Gear Ray robot, mech, whatever it is, unit, whilst a speech is going on to hundreds of soldiers in a room. There's a projector screen there. If you walk in front of it, like, Snake's head goes up on the screen, which I did, which was brilliant.
That is amazing.
Just a big silhouette of Snake, and they all turn around and shoot the shit out of him. Really good. But yeah, you're like crawling around trying to hide behind things, but at times, yeah, the guy doing the speech will say, let's all have a stretch, or he was doing like for David's one, he said, let's do an exercise, intruder to the left, to the right, and then that made you
yourself. Yeah, I thought the game had caught me.
Yeah, what a cool bit. But so Fortune, I don't like. Vamp, what do you think about Vamp?
I don't like him at all. The game kind of lost me a little bit. Like, within the sort of Metal Gear world, I can get on board with all the technological wizardry that happens. I don't like mechs, so I'm not into the Metal Gear, but again, within world, I just think they're stupidly made. Like, in all instances of all media, like, they're these multi-million dollar machines, perhaps billion dollar machines. Like, even in the Star Wars universe, those AT-ATs, shoot it in the leg, and it's broken.
Like, well, these ones bleed, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, which is very weird.
And of course, they roar. They apparently, the guy who designed them, he was like, he had like loads of weapons and shit on the outside of it, on like external weapons initially. And he kept getting told by Kojima to sort of like strip it down and take stuff off and like only leave things that would be, I don't know, necessary is the word, but he tried to make him sort of strip it down anyway, to the point where he basically went, oh, I just ended up looking like a dinosaur, so made it roar like a dinosaur, didn't I? I really do love that bit where it dives in the water off the tanker, though. I think
it's a cool visual, which I think is basically the entire reason mechs exist.
Yeah, of course.
I've got an idea or a theory for the Waluigi lay low for you.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So basically, the top of the list is basically what you said. There's no distinguished L consonant in the Japanese language. So essentially, it's the Patriots. It's a secretive organization, and that's the sort of code word for the Patriots. Emma touches on this idea when she mentions the human genome was sequenced, but a whole bunch of information was suppressed. There's actually far more genetic markers than the public or even the scientific community knows about. It's bringing the idea of censorship into focus with the context of the game's discussion on memes and mimetic engineering, language being the most important meme in human development. How can you pass on your ideas about something you can't even name? For the English-speaking characters, they can't warn anyone about the Patriots, discuss them, or expose them because they can't even say the words, the Patriots. Their nanomachines scramble the words in their mouth and it comes out as gibberish. For the Japanese-speaking audience, this goes one step further. Because of their lack of an L, the code words exist outside their language. They can't even correctly pronounce Lalulilelo nor write it within their alphabet. The Patriots are practicing a form of mimetic stealth. They are an idea that this assumed a form that cannot be expressed, communicated, or reproduced, which is actually quite interesting. I still think it sounds ridiculous, but that's...
It does sound fucking ridiculous, but yeah, that's quite cool, isn't it, really? Yeah. An explanation. Yeah. Vamp. So...
You asked what I thought about Vamp. Sorry, yeah, with it, and then I went on a rampage about mechs. What I'm saying though is within the world, I can get on board with the mechs and sort of just accept it and enjoy it. Vamp, to me, doesn't fit with anything in this game at all. They've gone from what's ostensibly a sort of sci-fi universe to a fantasy universe.
Yeah.
And he just, to me, feels at odds with everything else, with his like invincibility during the boss section where he can't be hit by a bullet, but he doesn't have one of those machines. He walks on water. He seems to be able to kind of fly. He also can run up walls, get shot in the head and be fine. And the explanation as to why he likes blood is because he got caught in a building that fell down and he was trapped under rubble. And to stay alive, he drank his parents' blood. And it's just stupid. Like, I know there's a lot of things...
That's fucked up as well.
Yeah. He just didn't fit with me. He just seemed very ill-fitting to me within the universe. And like, I actually kind of... I wondered for a moment if the first boss fight with Vamp, where he gets the red glow and you can't hit him, I wondered if that was... originally going to be a boss fight with what's her name? I've forgotten that again. The chick that made the mankini.
Fortune. It was actually supposed to be a boss fight with the Chinaman who's not in the game.
Ah.
There was going to be another character called the Chinaman, which, you know, I don't even know if I could say that anymore. But he had a big dragon tattoo on his back. And he would, if when he dove into that pool, the dragon on his back would come to life.
Oh my God,
and attack
that's
you.
That's
so
worse.
you had to dive in the pool after him and try and attack him in the water. And apparently there'd also be sharks that he would set on you as you dove in there. And they were apparently also put sharks in the bit where the shell gets flooded and you have to try and, I think it's shell two.
I heard if you went in there bleeding, they would like zero in on you or something.
Yeah, well, apparently you were supposed to try and like cut yourself on purpose to lure the sharks to somewhere and then try and swim away from them as they came near you or something. But apparently playtesters found that too stressful. So they
took it out.
Yeah,
I found that stressful. I found the swimming quite stressful. The moving up and down for some reason seemed to work the opposite way around from how my brain expected it to work. So I just kept doing the opposite of what I meant to do.
Well, it worked. That worked okay for me because that felt like Mario 64. But I felt like the only way I could ever get Raiden to move was to hammer the button really quickly. Like if I held it expecting like, you know, the Mario 64 kicky legs bit, he didn't do it. So to try and like line up with the square in the ceiling to get my breath back, I kept fucking it up. Or struggling with it anyway, and having to like go away and come back and reset. That guy, I can't remember the guy's name on the making of documentary, but they basically seem to get this like art designer to come back and talk about all the characters. And he keeps saying that he thinks Kojima, he always thought Kojima was joking when he was like telling him all this stuff. Like he said Raiden needed to be an exceptionally beautiful man. And he was like, you're joking, right? And then apparently when Kojima came up to him and said, I want a vampire in the game, the guy, again, thought he was joking. And as he's telling you this story in the documentary, he's got like this 1,000-yard stare of like, I thought he was joking, but he wasn't. But then, having said that, the guy then took the inspiration for the character model of Vamp from some like flamenco dancer.
Excellent.
And then that's why he starts doing all this weird dancing shit.
Who
on
was
water.
The wrestler in the WWE that was a flamenco dancer?
Oh, fucking El Fandango.
Yeah. I'd be in there if he was in the game.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't mind shooting Fandango. That would be great. I don't even understand that boss fight, though, because, he hasn't been hit by a single bullet. Apart from one that bounced off a fortune in the whole game. He's too busy dancing around. And then I've managed to shoot him quite a lot.
Yeah.
Or, as I said, again, hide in the corner, put some claymores down, have it walk.
Yeah, that was genius. That was genius.
Which is what I also did for Fat Man, which was my favourite boss fight. I liked the whole bomb defusal thing. I thought the way that they kind of fucked around with the 3D space and the first person aiming to try and like cleverly hide all these bombs.
I got caught twice. I think it took me 3 attempts because I kept getting to a bomb and I couldn't find it.
Oh, I think I had, I've written it down here, 25 seconds left when I
oh, nice one. Nice.
On the heliport. And I love the fact that Fat Man's like, I've got one more bomb,
it's
mate.
It's the biggest one.
It's under him. Yeah, you've got to pull him away to get at it. Yeah. But I really liked that boss fight. It was, you know,
it was
quite similar to Vulcan Raven. In there's storage containers in the way. You've got to try and get behind Vulcan Raven. You can lay a bunch of claymores like we did for our Metal Gear Solid 1 playthrough, but this is just a lot faster. There's a lot more urgency to it. The guy's on fucking roller skates. Shooting you with an Uzi, but he's also doing these bombs that he's setting up that you have to defuse or the boss fight is over. And apparently the timings, he changes the timings on the bombs later on. They're not always like 90 seconds. Sometimes they're only 30 seconds. So you kind of have to pay attention.
Well, I remember about the bombs as well. I was a big fan of, I mean, it's not a difficult thing to do, but it made me feel really good about the game. I lost a bunch of time when you were having to do that section where you were going around the base, freezing the bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And I died and I got game rage and I quit. So when I loaded it up, I think I texted you, I'd lost like an hour, but I skipped all the cutscenes and I actually only had lost like 10 minutes. And but before when I loaded it back up, it loaded it back up when I had just been speaking to Snake or Plissken for the first time in that room. And I noticed that I'd gone round all the rooms opening the cupboard doors to see what was in them. And I went up to
look at the Konami's eyes posters.
Yeah, I went and closed the door on the one where the bomb is in that room, and the bomb is sitting there. And then
I didn't figure. That's the one I figured out like last. I had no idea where that. I was going round and round and round for ages looking for that.
And then I went and had a look in the toilets of the female bathroom, and the bomb is sitting up there as well. I just love that it's already there. And if you were smart, you could sort of see them.
Yeah, because one of the clues for that as well, isn't it? Is like something like. somewhere you wouldn't normally think to look or something, or you wouldn't go.
You've got to like look at it in a mirror reflection to see what it is.
Yeah, but it's the fact that it's in the women's toilet, so you wouldn't normally go in there. Or you wouldn't think to look there.
They do it a couple of times. They give you your cigarettes, and they go, "Oh, you can use them in the usual way when you're in the tanker section." And it's like, "Oh, I know what you mean. I know what you mean."
Yeah, yeah. The infinite ammo bandana thing is ridiculous as well for Snake near the end. You can get an infinite ammo bandana in this one as well, I believe.
Oh, can you?
And I think you get that by. Forgive me if I'm wrong, listeners who are massive fans of this game. I'm pretty sure it's from getting all the dog tags.
I don't know
how many enemies you've got to do it, but every enemy you hold up, you can get their dog tag off them. So I think you maybe have to get every single one.
Oh, is that how you do it? Because to the point that I was like, have they taken the dog tags out of this remaster? Because I got one dog tag and I was like, I don't know.
I didn't get any.
I don't know whose I got. It must have been someone's. It was obviously, I think it was a boss's dog tags.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, maybe you do get one set.
Yeah, so I thought they had taken them out because it just didn't click how it was supposed to get them.
Yeah, you have to hold them up and then they like shake and it comes off. But I think you can do that to everybody. You can play the whole game without killing anyone, including the bosses, I believe. So there's like a pacifist run. I think maybe that unlocks European extreme difficulty, but I could be chatting shit there.
Back to the bosses. I was fully expecting and prepared to come into this podcast and say that I generally didn't like the bosses. Now I'm thinking back to it. I enjoyed the Fat Man boss. That was a good boss. I actually, in hindsight, once I kind of figured out what was going on, because I just felt the controls weren't doing what I wanted them to do, but the last boss, when you're fighting all the Metal Gears, I quite liked that one. I didn't much enjoy the fight at the end. And I didn't enjoy the second vamp fight was fine. The first vamp fight I didn't much like it. I find it quite deeply stressful when it was forcing me to do stuff quickly in first person because I just didn't think it was very intuitive.
Yeah, well, I swear it said something like, you can tap the button to aim. Tap the button gently to aim first.
Is that how you do it?
Like an AK or whatever. But no, I couldn't get it to do that.
All I could do with the AK was shoot. So if I had it out and it was in first person mode, it just wasn't there. And then you press X and it would come up. So you just had to figure out where you were shooting.
Yeah, totally.
As you were spraying.
Yeah, it was really annoying. I completely agree with that. Yeah, I love the Metal Gear raid fights. Very, very stressful. If you play on the hardest difficulty, you get like 24 of them or something.
Yeesh.
Before it ends. I can't remember how many I had to do on medium. Maybe 10, maybe 9, something like that.
Perhaps, yeah.
Can't remember. Once you get into a rhythm, it's not too bad. I mean, I didn't realise to shoot them in the leg and then in their open mouth first time I did it. So it was taking me fucking ages to whittle them down. And I'm pretty sure the chaff grenade thing does work.
Does it? Okay.
From what I've read. Just doesn't seem as obvious as previous. I just assumed it must do because that's what you do in the first one. And I love the fact that it's like, the first one, it felt like a real achievement to fight a Metal Gear. So this one, you fight like fucking loads of them. Just in a row, queuing up to fuck you up. Really, really cool. Also on the dog tag thing as well. And back as well, right from the beginning of the discussion about like Kojima thinking this was his last ever Metal Gear. I do quite like the attempted closure at the end of the game where Raiden has your name on the dog tag and he like fucking throws it away, and the game, you know, Snake's telling you effectively like, you know, you didn't have a choice in a lot of what you've done here, but you have a choice on how you take what's happened and go on from it, which I guess was kind of like a talking to the players, like, don't be obsessive twats, just don't think, you know, don't go too mental about this, just take away what you want and leave me alone.
My two things about that. One is, when Metal Gear Solid 2 came out, they ran a competition that you could enter, and you sent in your name, and the dog tags that you collected through Metal Gear Solid 2 were real people's names who had sent in their names to the competition.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end, I remember sitting with my pal Joel, and when he completed the game, at the end, obviously, Raiden pulls out the dog tags and it's got your name on it. He lost his shit, thinking that he had won the competition and they had made him Raiden. And I was like, mate, you just put your name in at the start of the game. Like, oh.
on a dog tag.
Yeah. The second one for that is because my name is David. Snake's name is David.
Of course.
And then when Dryden pulls out the dog tags, it's David. That didn't quite land properly because he just took it and was like, oh, they're both called David.
Very nice. There's also symbolism there for the, I mean, yeah, Kojima fucking loves the symbolism, but he made a, again, he made a big point in the making of documentary about how the theme of the game in terms of like memetics, as you were saying, and this like how Metal Gear 1 is about genetics because of Solid Snake and Liquid Snake, and they're genetically different because they're clones of Big Boss. This one's about memetics, where we're talking about things that you pass on to different generations, not through genetics, things like language and culture and music and whatever. And his plan with that was to sort of symbolize that he was passing on how to make a Metal Gear game to younger developers at Konami, because this was supposedly his last ever Metal Gear that he wanted to do. You know, Raiden's throwing away your dog tags at the end of like, you no longer have control over me, and I'm taking away from, you know, Snake's telling you to take something away from this that you value or whatever. Like, Kojima's trying to say that to the development team of,
yeah,
you take this, and you know, this was your experience too, and you take what you want from it and move on from here. But of course, Konami never actually let him do that, and he had to fucking make three more of the bastard things.
Poor man.
But yeah, that was, I quite like, I think that's quite cool, quite, yeah, sweet that he tried to put that in there to sort of pass on the torch, but it wasn't allowed to. And the game is very much about like becoming Raiden's game. You know, the title screen changes to Raiden after you've beaten the game. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually notice this, but in the opening credits.
Well, that's,
I think,
smart, actually. Yeah, that would have been much more impactful had they stopped there.
Yeah, the opening credits, there's like a DNA sequence, like it shows like, you know, DNA strands and stuff in the sort of James Bondy style shit they do. I didn't notice until I watched the video back that the outer strand of the DNA in the opening credits, it turns into a snake that like fucking
does it,
like, goes off this side, it just goes off the screen, yeah, like, yeah, snakes away, which is like, oh, you know, you're no longer Solid Snake anymore or whatever. Yeah, it's all in there. They chuck it all in there, but they, you know, they hint at all this stuff, but then when they actually deliver it, it's just a hammer of text and reading and listening.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I think I'm actually coming around to it a little bit more the more we speak about it. I think I said to you earlier that like the game is so bloated with exposition that,
yeah,
very little of it actually lands. Sort of pulling what I said before is I just like, as an effective piece of communication, like, I mean, we've spoken about auteurs a couple times this year, just because like, and the other video game auteur, Sam Lake,
yes,
to me that's a much more interesting version of that. But I mean, that's a taste thing. That's not a who's better, who's not thing.
Yeah.
I'm very torn now because everything we've been speaking about so far is incredibly interesting and works really, really well. I found myself that there was so much exposition in Metal Gear Solid 2 that I was losing interest and wandering off, and then I'd catch myself losing interest, and I would have missed a load of dialogue that if they were a bit more succinct and had maybe been a bit more selective, rather than having all these ideas and cramming them all in, if they had gone through and just put a few in, I think for me at least, it would have been a bit more impactful. The fun bit about it is that it's been quite fun to sort of pull at these strands, like pick a strand and pull at it and see where it goes, like, yeah, the Lalu Lele Lo stuff. Yeah. That has
been very
fun.
Rarely come up with nothing when you try and delve into any part of it, right?
I'm struggling to now repeat what I was saying about like how I thought it was, because there's so much in it, a lot of it doesn't land because it's just becomes a bit of a confusing mess. Again, I'm going to nick from what I said before. One thing I always try and keep in mind is Lewis Carroll, who wrote Alice in Wonderland. He said, like, when he talks about people that like treat language like it's this elite thing where you have to do everything in specific ways and has to be exactly right, There's obviously settings and places for that. If you're like writing for a magazine, for example, or if you're writing an academic paper, I think you need to use proper words and use proper punctuation and things like that. But like, as a general discussion, if the person you're communicating with, his idea is through general discussion with the person that you're communicating with, understands what you're trying to say and gets your point, then that communication's worked, and that communication is not this thing to be gatekept.
Which is obviously a theme of this game as well. Yeah, somebody is trying to gatekeep it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this game obviously has a lot to say. And my concern is that most people won't take the time to look at what it has to say, and that there's so much of it, 90% of it will go over people's heads. Meaning that,
or they'll go full on like deep state's real. Kojima knew it.
Yeah, exactly, and take the complete wrong point from what he's getting at. Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of torn now, and I'm not quite sure if I still have that same opinion. But my concern yesterday was that they had put so much in it that the impactful and interesting stuff he clearly has to say doesn't quite land because he's crammed it so full, and ends up being a game that is less than the sum of its parts because there's so much in there that you end up just not taking any of it in because it's just so overwhelming if you try and start piecing it all together.
I don't think that's an incorrect way of thinking about it. I think he likes to explain himself within mm-hmm. the heavy exposition as well.
Yeah.
Like everything that he feels like he needs to, that he's brought in, that's like a concept that maybe he's thought of or a concept that's based in an area that he doesn't expect you to be familiar with, like military stuff. Like he has to explain everything that's related to the military, like all the things mm-hmm. that have got like an acronym or an initialism. Like he will tell you what all of that means and explain like all the stuff to do with nuclear fusion and all this kind of shit. Like it's just not, as you said, it's fat that could have been trimmed to get the message across in a way that's more widely understandable, because the message is really
it's
interesting.
Awesome. Really interesting.
Yeah.
Much more so having had this conversation with you than even really, because I came into this podcast thinking, oh, there's a lot of cool themes here.
Yeah.
But there's so much more to it than I even realized.
Mm. It is always sprinkled in around like a game that is
so ahead of its time as well. Like,
That's why I think this, we're looking at it differently now, because it is just so ahead of its time. Nothing was trying stuff like this at the time. And I don't know if gaming has necessarily proven a way to do this since then that's actually better or at least more effective. And it does often feel as well that if a game does try and be this thematic and sort of intellectual on a basis that like you possibly have to do some extracurricular reading or have an understanding of themes that are quite high concept, people do tend to sort of kind of look back on it afterwards and be like, oh, that game was up its fucking ass, look how highly that one thought of itself. Like look at the reception now, or the general feeling now around Bioshock Infinite.
Mm.
People think that game is just for like wanky wankers who love a good wank. Like the whole, oh, there's always a lighthouse, there's always this, because that was very much trying to do what, you know, that was very much a reflection on what this was doing, of like talking about games and how games as a media is experienced and how you have little control over what you're doing, and the agency is all set by the puppet master with the director of the game, and you're the puppet who's doing what you're being told, but you can take away different things from it. Like that is very much repeated in Bioshock Infinite the way that it's said here, but people look back on Bioshock Infinite now generally and just sort of think like, what a fucking like fart sniffer of a game that is.
Yeah, that's a fair
so
point.
How do you do it better than this? Like, well, potentially you don't load it in a 45-minute cutscene at the end of the game in the middle of a boss, because some of it's in the middle of a boss fight, which again goes back to the fact that Codex seems to also pause time and just stop Solidus from attacking you for a bit while you have a chat to an AI. But it's just so much.
Do you not think it's representative of a sort of ongoing friction within the games industry anyway? Because like obviously like storytelling and the narrative or the story or whatever, that's what books and movies live and die by. Whereas video games want to be sort of taken on the same level as that, but they also have other things pulling themselves in different directions. Like, you need
like
game.
You?
Yeah.
You're hamstrung by the fact that the player has agency over the story,
yeah.
Like where the story's going and what happens in the way that the action unfolds. So this game feels like, and I guess quite a lot of the Metal Gear games feel like, I better take the control away from you to tell you this message, otherwise you won't hear it. Like, if you cannot miss my, you can't miss what I'm trying to tell you, or you won't know what's going on. So I have to force you to stop playing and listen to it.
Yeah,
and it will just be you listening. There's nothing to look at except a green box on either side of the screen, and you just got to listen.
So I was trying to think of like
really
other
hard
games.
Medium to do that.
As you were talking about that, like other games that do have serious subject matter and interesting things to say. I think Alan Wake, the Alan Wake series, was specifically Alan Wake 2, is doing interesting things.
And it's weaving that into like it's part of the gameplay in a really unique way. And it's also using live action in a really unique way that probably does make looking at cutscenes slightly more not powerful, but like effective. If you're just trying to make me watch somebody act something, I might as well just watch a real person act it, and that actually worked quite nicely in Alan Wake 2.
You might be right in that there's a level of snootiness to it. I mean, I think I'm never going to think of it again, but the one that I always semi-agree with is that people that say Kojima is a frustrated, you should just go off and make movies. Well, actually, no, he's chosen to make games. And just because he likes to tell a complicated story doesn't mean that is where he should be. He might have an interest in film. He almost certainly does. But the references he's always pouring in, he definitely does.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean he doesn't want to be a game designer. Like, I think maybe as an industry, the industry is simultaneously desperate to be taken on the same level as film and TV and books and things like that. But also, when you get people coming along trying to move the needle in that way, you're right, we do like to cut them down. Ken Levine is another one. I mean, I'd be mourning about the new Ken Levine game because he disappeared for 15 years and he's come back to make a game that looks like all his other games.
You know,
Sam Lake's another one. He's like you're saying, where he does interesting things. A lot of sci-fi, to be fair, has been in fantasy, has been doing it for a long time, but again, that's a well-established thing to do. I mean, like Star Trek is a good example. I know we're talking about TV now, but like, you can use sci-fi with aliens and things to talk about subjects that are difficult and maybe a bit touchy. So for example, in the US at the moment, race is a big thing. A perpetual big thing in the US. Yeah. But sci-fi can use aliens to tell a story about race in a way that people will find palatable and quite happily absorb. And you can sort of use your stories to teach people about how you think they should view the world. And yeah, I guess sort of games like I'm trying to think of, so like the Geth in Mass Effect is maybe an example of that. So yeah, there are bits and pieces that have been doing that over the years. It is lighter on the ground, but it's lighter on the ground by design because there's other things that we need to do. But there's a lot of guff in there as well, isn't there? I mean, like the Fallout story, as much as it's a fun game, it's not that interesting, really. Have I just offended someone? Probably have.
Yeah, the grand narratives of Fallout has not always been that gripping, has it? It's been the setting and the premise and then the stories that unfold within the world. Yeah,
what's happening in the vaults is interesting, not oh where's my son gone, oh he's an old man now.
Exactly We've gone deeper on the themes than I expected us to, but I'm glad we did though. I was actually quite apprehensive when I was talking to you about this, like how the fuck do we talk about this without sounding really stupid, that we don't, or saying something that someone else has said like hundreds of times in a massive essay. You can guarantee people have written like dissertations on Metal Gear Solid 2, and you know, it is a very important piece of text within the industry and in general. I think, like we said earlier how sort of prescient the themes are and how like just you can see them in the real world right now, and the way that it tried to tell a really, really intelligent story, really thought-provoking story, but probably botched the execution of it in a way that made it a little bit too overwhelming.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's ultimately my feeling on it, in that it's what it's saying is incredibly interesting. The way it does it is really interesting. It just does it too much. in a way that becomes confusing. And there's a very famous saying, and I don't know where it is. I think it's actually talking about film, but it's show, don't tell. And I feel like this is very much a tell.
Yeah, it is. Show.
It's like, look at what I have to say as it's ramming it down your throat. It's not. It's funny because it's simultaneously subtle in some ways and utterly ham-fisted in other ways. So
yeah, it plants all the subtle stuff really, really brilliantly throughout the whole of the game, and you never really know if it is a real thing that's going on or if it's a simulation. And, you know, even like when you're in Metal Gear Arsenal and fucking computer code is coming through the walls and in the floors and stuff, like, brilliant. But then to have the payoff of that just be listening to somebody talk, there's a better way.
Because the Colonel's in Metal Gear Solid 1, right? That's who you're speaking to in the first one. Is he real in Metal Gear Solid 1? He's not an AI.
Yeah, he's real. Is he real in this at any point? I think it's the same thing I was saying with Rose earlier on, is does it start off where the Colonel's real and then that bit at the end is the AI after GW's been infected by the virus? Does that take over your codec?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that just, were they AI all along?
AI
versions of the Colonel and Rose, but Rose is real because you see her at the end and she is pregnant.
Well, so he goes, Raiden starts saying, is Rose real? Has she ever been real? And then Snake says, oh, I don't know. So it's up to interpretation, I think.
Yeah.
Does it elaborate in any way in his next game? Is it Revengeance?
I can't remember.
We're going to have to get to that game at some point.
Mm-hmm. It's good fun. It's platinum games, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
I would say the gameplay is good. One thing I did want to say that I haven't mentioned yet in terms of gameplay is I see why they did it, because it's effective when you go into a room and you haven't made it to the node, but the camera angle is annoying. Like, you see nothing. It is like, but you're basically just see the ground at your feet for the whole time. And there's a lot of, once you get to the node, I spend 90% of my time staring at the map to see what's happening with the guards. It did the old Batman thing where you've always got your Batman vision on, except I was just staring at a small corner of the screen. And the other thing,
you do feel utterly hopeless without, when you haven't got that node yet, right?
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere or watched something somewhere where they were talking about, like, for Metal Gear 3, like, they really had to change the camera angle at that point, because that game is a lot more sprawling and open, and you're in, good, you know, using camera.
Yeah, it never goes back, because 4 is behind the back, and 5 is behind the back as well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking 4 was almost I think I've played like 30 minutes of 4, but the 30 minutes I did play was like almost claustrophobically behind your back. Like, in my memory of it, he takes up a lot of the back of the character, like takes up a lot of the screen. The other thing I want to ask about is the bugs. Why are there random bugs about the place?
I have not figured that out.
And does this come up because it reminded me of the random bugs that are in the DARPA chief's cell in Metal Gear Solid 1?
Yeah.
And is this a thing? Does it mean someone has been there that you meet later on? Is it the nanomachines? I don't know. Because they just start popping up. Oh, another thing that pissed me off was the mobile phone that you pick up, because it always phoned me after I was already doing what it was telling me to do, but it kept beeping until you opened it up and read it, and it would be like, I'd be like standing putting a fire out with my coolant, and it would be beep beep beep, and I'd put my coolant away and take up the phone and be like, put the fire out with your coolant, and I'm like, fuck off.
I mean, if you try and Google about there being bugs in Metal Gear Solid 2, obviously it starts talking about bugs rather than the sneaky, you know, the little bugs that you could squish. Apparently, so I've seen somebody talk about them being water bugs, maybe because it's flooded. If they are water bugs, I don't know. Did you try, when you were supposed to use the coolant to get rid of them because Emma's scared of them, I didn't realise that for a few seconds. Or I tried it and the coolant wasn't working properly, so I tried to use some C4 on them, and it's quite funny that they basically just get splattered against your vision.
That's great.
Actually, are they sea lice? Yeah, that's what they are.
Didn't know that was a thing.
I guess that's why they're on there. Maybe they're a thing that you get in, like, oil rigs and shit.
Yeah, maybe.
Because they went in loads of them. They went and did like loads of location scouting and like things like that, tankers and oil rigs to get it. Visually, though, let's just potentially end on the fact that, like, the jump in visual fidelity and, like, cinematic
incredible.
Quality
Absolutely
from the first
incredible.
To the second, for a PS2 game, this game is just phenomenal. Like, not just in terms of, like, the way the characters are modeled and how they look and, you know, because the areas are not necessarily that great to look at. There's a lot of grey and brown because it's, you're inside, like, metal structures.
Have you ever stepped on metal that made that noise, by the way?
Oh, what, when it's, when you're trying to sneak around, it just goes
yeah.
clink, clink.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I haven't. No. I do like the fact that he's got a sneak suit on, actually, so you can just basically run around. You haven't got to sneak around anywhere.
Did you get distracted by the way his posture was? He's constantly
kind of like
the Pink Panther everywhere he went.
Yeah.
And even to the point that you were climbing down the ladder of the operating base with Emma, and she's right. climbing down the ladder like a normal person that doesn't climb a lot of ladders. And then you look at Raiden and he's like the Pink Panthering down the ladder like an absolute weirdo.
Like scurry upstairs.
Yeah.
Sort of tippy toes, yeah.
And it just really jumped out to me when you go undercover and you dress up like a soldier and all the soldiers are walking around normal and he's like slinking about with his gun like this.
Yeah.
It's like you,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool section, actually. It's really fun dressing up as a soldier. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I don't know if that was like sort of a way to preserve some sort of memory by not having the area that you're in be overly loaded with intricate detail, especially
must
when
be.
You're outside and it's basically just brown. But like the amount of like the animations that they've got in here, like I said, the interactivity of the environment a lot of the time, mm-hmm. but just like the cinematics are ridiculous. Like the motion capture is like true next gen for when this came out. Like, it's just an incredibly visually impressive game.
Yeah, you got to think like the AI stuff like that, with what they're doing and how they're reacting, and like things like following footsteps or like picking up and stuff and cleaning rooms like that. They must be quite processor intensive. I mean, I'd love to know what RAM, what kind of RAM a PS2 has got. PS2 RAM, 4 meg of EDRAM. So 4 meg of RAM. So
not a lot then.
Not a lot.
Like when I knocked that guy out, and he's asleep, and another guard came up to him and just kicked him in the head to wake him up. That was great. I do like the addition of the first person view as well, even though it's not as useful as it probably would go on to be. Hopefully in 3 it's a little bit better than this. Maybe you've got at least a crosshair would be nice. But giving you the M9 as well, which they obviously retroactively put into the GameCube remake of Metal Gear 1. You know, that obviously, I've heard people say, like, you know, that gives you a real choice now that you don't actually need to kill anybody. You can, it's basically telling you, like, I've given you a way to knock all the guards out and clear all the rooms. You don't have to shoot them. You don't have to choke them out. Like, you can deal with it. But didn't really stop me from killing a lot of people.
I don't care. Same approach when I play Hitman. I just snap necks left and right. I don't care.
I was fine with using the M9 until I had a room, I think it was the warehouse, when I was trying to go around and find all like the extra stuff when I got my level whatever it was card and get all the cool weapons, that one of the guards like woke up in the same time I was in there, and I was like, well, I can't run that risk anymore, so now everyone has to get shot to kill.
So that was one thing that I actually thought was quite smart that the game did, is that so when I started the game, I was obviously killing people left and right, taking names, and I was just like clearing rooms, whether the people were in the way or not, to just save them, setting off alarm. I was just snapping necks. And eventually they go, why is no one checking in?
I love
and
that.
Then they just send the enemies back, and it's like, oh, this is smart. This is making me think about this. I can't just sort of break the game by killing everyone. Really like that.
Or if you do, you have to hide them, because if you were able to kill them and then hide them in a locker or whatever, they would come and be like, I can't find the missing soldier, so let's go back, and they would leave again.
Or do they leave? They don't just save replace the soldiers?
No. They would just bugger off.
Okay. Because if they find the dead body, they replace the bodies.
Well, so, yeah, but there was one section where they just weren't doing that for me. I don't know why. They were like coming to be like, why are you not responding, as you say? And then they'd be like, no sign of the missing soldier, coming back. Because if you got caught, they were like bringing in these big fucking bastards with like riot shields and shotguns and
Often
stuff.
Often if I got caught, I was just letting myself die and reloading the checkpoint.
So, yeah, me too sometimes. I, my favourite bit of stealthy stuff. I managed to do that naked bit quite easily. I was really surprised by how much I kind of just like
did you?
Ran through that and got away with it. But when you have to escort Emma back to wherever it is that you're going. And yeah. Snake fucking lies and says, don't worry, mate, there's nobody here. They've all gone into the shell core. There's fucking loads of people
yeah.
there. Bellend. But luckily, I'd done the bit where you can punch that locker and get all the pornos off the top after Emma's bird tells you that it's up there.
Was that how you do it?
A mental thing to say. You could do that. I didn't realise as well until I figured that out, that any time you try to open a locker that was locked, just punch it and it'll open.
Shit.
I just laid porno mags all the way around the route I was going to take with Emma. So like any, I failed the first time, so I knew where the guards were going to come from. So I just left them a nice little porno there to have a look at while me and Emma snuck our way out. That was great fun. What a great, yeah. I think now that we've, you know, now basically that we've discussed as much of the story and themes as we can probably get away with without sounding either completely ill-informed or massively pompous.
Yeah.
If I went back and played this game again, I'd probably just fucking skip all that and just enjoy how fun the stealth and gameplay of this really game actually good. Is.
Yeah, it's got me excited to go and play more Metal Gear. So I might Big take time. A break. Like I say, like not without its problems. The cutscenes are too much. I remember I was thinking, like, I'd basically finished it last night, and then, like, an hour and a half later, I was still sitting there watching cutscenes.
You text me when you had just, like, killed Solidus, like, right, another 80 minutes of cutscene, and I'll be done. And then you never came back. And I just thought, I wonder if he's still there. I text you, like, an hour later, like, is it still going?
I got to the cutscenes, tried to skip the cutscene to see if I could just poke around the menus for a bit, and it wouldn't let me skip, not the cutscenes, the end credits. And I thought, for fuck's sake. So I put the controller down, walked off, and then came back. Yeah, once
didn't
I
want to listen to the little fucking city pop jazz the end credits.
Oh, I'll tell you what, that... See, when that hits, oh, that is an awesome song, isn't it?
Yeah, but they don't really use it that much.
No, it's like
they kind
twice.
Of subtly put it, yeah. I don't know if it's on your one. If it's not on your one, it's fucking unforgivable. The PS3 version that I was playing on the... Legacy Collection, you obviously can't pause cutscenes. I cannot believe they didn't add that. If they didn't add that into your version on the Series X, I mean, come on, it's 45 minutes. I've got a fucking wife and kids. I can't just sit there and be like, sorry, Cassie, you'll have to feed yourself today because fucking the Colonel's gone a bit weird and he's talking about bloody memes. Just let us pause the cutscene, you pricks.
Best thing about it
no game should not have that in it.
Sony should figure out how Microsoft do their smart resume, because it is so good. It is so good. Like I'd turn my Xbox off and just come back and it would just be exactly where I left it. So good. So it's good in that regard.
I did not have that on my PS3. I basically would like leave my PS3 on for hours while I was going around like making dinner and putting Cassie to bed, because I can't be asked to load up the loading screen again.
No.
I didn't trust the saving either, because sometimes it would just mug you off and be like, nah, I know you saved it after you did that stupid jump to get the silencer for the AK and scurried round. I slipped on bird shit the first time I did that, when I dropped down onto the pipe. You know,
yeah, I did that. Yeah, fell off. Yeah.
So I didn't trust it, because then I'd saved it after I got over there, loaded it again later on, and it put me right back to before I did the jump again. So I was like, well, I don't trust this save thing anymore. So if I have to take a break, I'm just leaving the console on for hours.
I might well be misremembering, so feel free to tell me I am. I thought in Metal Gear Solid 1, if I wanted to attach a silencer to a gun, I had to have it selected in the left-hand side of my inventory. And if I took it, if I sort of changed something else, it came off. I was a big fan that it's... Like, once you selected it, it stayed on the gun that you put it on.
Yeah, it's not going away. Yeah, you're right, though. I think that was how it was in Metal Gear 1.
Very, very good, with a few caveats. But caveats that didn't overall really spoil the experience.
No.
I will say, though, I enjoyed this game far more now, having sat and discussed it.
I knew we would have this. I knew we would feel this way. Because it's a lot to take in sitting by yourself and, you know, in a dark room at night or whatever. But when you then sort of tear it apart a little bit more and actually appreciate what it's trying to say and how prophetic it was, and you're not having to sit there and listen to it say it anymore for half an hour, then it feels better. Like, it deserves the credit it gets, as you know, widely touted as one of the best games
ever. Kojima and Kojima does as well, for all his sort of failings. And that's another thing as well. Maybe I'll try and be better at it than I am, but like, he takes a risk, and not everything, if you're willing to take risks, not everything's going to work, but at least you're taking the risks. And especially in an industry, if we look at our industry today, everything it does feels very, very safe, and cloning of everything else. I mean, we're part of the Gears of War podcast. I think the last Gears of War game played it about as safe. The last two Gears of War games have played it about as safe as they possibly can. They've just invented like a new alien race that is basically the old alien race. They've just changed the names. And then the like looking at like Fortnite and Call of Duty and stuff and what these games have become. Mm. I'm glad that people like Kojima exist that are willing to take a chance and turn it on its head.
Absolutely. There's no better way to end it than with that.
No. Alex, next up, we've got Halo Combat Evolved, which I'm very much looking forward to play. You better get that installed so that we can play it next year, because it's like 110 gig or something like that.
Oh, fuck. Can you not selectively just install the ones you want to play?
Maybe.
Okay, I'll do that before I go to bed.
Yeah. I've been watching the Halo TV show on Paramount Plus. It is...
Oh, you have?
Well, Series 1 is god-awful. Some of the worst TV I've ever seen in my life. Series 2 is surprisingly good. So if anyone wants to watch it, just skip series 1 and start with series 2. The only thing is there are things that are paying off in series 2 that I'm like, appreciating because I've seen series 1, like Halsey, who is the sort of human, because like the human version
Commander
of Cortana.
Halsey, is it?
Commander Halsey, oh, right. Dr. Halsey. Yeah, Cortana is basically a... So in the TV show, can't remember how they do it in the games, but in the TV show, they make a clone of Dr. Halsey, fast like track her up to adulthood, so she's got Halsey's brain, and they then take the they kill the clone and take the consciousness and implant it into Master Chief's head. But in the game, Master Chief's got a wee chip he puts in his helmet so he can take her in and out. In the TV show, she lives in there permanently. Oh. But yeah, surprisingly good TV show. So if you're ever at a loose end, worth a look.
Yeah, and then of course I'm psyched for Fallout, which will have already been and gone and been watched by the time this podcast comes out. But
I'll give that a look. I think that looks fantastic, and I hope it's as good as it
looks. I'm worried I'm going to fall into playing a Fallout game.
If you do, I might join you, whichever one you decide to go for. Maybe make it New Vegas, because that's the one I've not played.
It would be New Vegas, yeah. It would be that, because this one's set in Vegas as well, isn't it?
Is it? TV show. Right, okay. Mm. I think you know more than me. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. And I don't know, maybe you have a Fallout podcast coming at some point.
Fallout.
Oh, yes.
For this part, I'm so psyched.
The games industry needs like popular, good TV shows coming out like this. The Last of Us TV show.
Not like that Resident Evil one.
Not like that Resident Evil one. The Last of Us TV show is great. Yeah. Hopefully Fallout's great. Halo's decent enough. It's not going to change the game, but it's good enough. I feel like they should make a Bioshock one. We've got that that movie coming out, Borderlands movie. Doesn't look great. The Mario movie was good, on the other hand. Assassin's Creed
was
good
fan service.
Doom was
bad. Fallout's got enough like open-ended sort of player-driven narrative things you can do with it that you can just get a good writer. You can pay like the right amount of respect to the source material and get the world building set up correctly, and then just let a good writer write a good story.
I agree.
You don't have to follow the story like Last of Us did.
I think one thing that video game does very, very well is sort of world building. And I think I wish they would do that more. So like, I actually think the Halo TV show could have been better if they had made it about an ODST trooper rather than, and then they could have had like appearances of Master Chief rather than setting it around Master Chief. Same with The Witcher. Don't think you needed to have The Witcher in The Witcher TV show. You could have just made a show set in the Witcher universe. Fallout example, though, that's what they're doing. Try to think of other ones. Like, there's so many that you could do that with that would just make a good setting, world set. Take the setting and build something around it.
Yeah, TV has definitely been the redemption of
The Last of Us. Is another one you could do that with as well. It didn't have to be Joel and Ellie.
Yeah, I didn't think it needed to be that.
But that's for another show, I guess.
Yes. So next up is Halo, yeah.
Next up, Halo. So check out that. Once we're done playing that, we're going to attempt to play that in co-op.
Yep.
And I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Winner Is You podcast. If you liked what you heard, and even if you didn't, why not give our numbers a bump by subscribing to us in your podcast feed of choice? Or if you prefer to inscribe, well, you can inscribe the podcast if you like. But if you want to consume them in a visual format, you can head on over to YouTube and search for Winners You Podcast, where you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. If the podcast isn't enough for you, you can also head over to the website formerly known as Twitter, where Alex and I have Twitter, at Super Smiley and at Super Thrillers, respectively. Winner's You Pod is at Winner Is You Pod.
You're at David Smiley 1, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, I'm speaking rubbish. I'm at David Smiley 1. Oh, I don't even know my own Twitter handle. And you can also send
it used
us
to an, be that.
Yeah. You can also send us an email to winnerisyoupod@gmail.com. Alex, have you got any housekeeping or are we out of here?
Let's get out of here, I think, because by the time this comes out, it's going to be ages away. I haven't even done the fucking the draft one yet.
No. And on that bombshell, I've been David, he has been Alex, and we have been in a Winner's Shoot, and I'm out.
Metal Gear.
Hind D. Hind. How does he say it? Hind D.